हरिः ॐ भूर्भुवस्सः तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। May we meditate on that Supreme Being who dwells in the hearts of all. He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move and have our being. May He illumine our hearts and may He guide us in every way. ॐ शांति शांति शांति, पीस पीस पीस। We have been studying the Mundak Upanishad. In this Upanishad, first it has been pointed out that there are two kinds of knowledge, higher and lower. Lower knowledge is the knowledge and understanding of science, grammar, literature, and also the study of the scriptures. And so mark this, that if you just simply read the scriptures and try to understand the intellectual meaning, understand the meaning intellectually, that is lower knowledge. It is not that it has to be discarded. But the higher knowledge is that by which that which is the eternal reality becomes known. In other words, to know God, to know Brahman, is the higher knowledge. And this Upanishad deals, and all the Upanishads deal with the higher knowledge. In other words, how to know God, how to realize Brahman. Then also we have seen that Brahman can be attained, can be realized by meditation, by meditating upon Him. And then how to meditate, also it has been pointed out that how we have to meditate upon Him within our own hearts, within the shrines of our own hearts, because there He dwells. And in that connection, I explain to you how consciousness itself is Brahman. You see, that we have consciousness, that we have life, that we have intelligence, that we can breathe, we can think. Behind all that, there is the power of Brahman. It is His power that expresses in life, consciousness and everything, good or bad. But the power behind is of Brahman. Now, for instance, that does not affect Brahman. The evil or good do not affect the Brahman. Just like air. Air carries good odor and bad odor, but air is not affected there. And so again, where to meditate upon Him and where to find Him? Within ourselves. And that has been emphasized again and again throughout. Yes, God is also outside, is everywhere. But where can we find Him? Within ourselves. Altar, for instance, or you build a shrine room, you have an altar, and you try to think of the presence of God on the altar, that's all necessary, but it's like a crutch that you hold upon. The real thing is, that altar outside, you must learn to feel that altar inside. You have to be each a living temple of God. You see, it's good to begin as a little kid studying kindergarten, but do not stay there, grow up. Of course, it is true that when it comes to spiritual life and spirituality, we are still in the kindergarten. So altar and shrine and all that is necessary and important. But if you have to depend upon that throughout your spiritual life, it's not so good. That altar has to be built within yourself. It is built there. It is there. You have to recognize it. Recognize that altar and realize that presence of God and realize your union with God within yourself. Then also, we have seen that when that experience comes, what happens in your life? All doubts cease, all the past karmas are burnt, and you attain to that felicity, that immortal bliss while living on earth. Now we come to a new chapter in this. And here again what is pointed out, that yes, meditation is important. Experience, you have to experience God, and through meditation you experience, but there are other spiritual disciplines which we must practice. See, meditation is not so simple and easy. And so there must be some preparatory ground, as it were. The soil has to be made ready. And so, some other spiritual disciplines are brought forth in this section. Also again, is emphasized, is brought to our notice, what exactly this Brahman who is within us, what that is. And what we call ourselves an individual man, what is the difference between this individual man and the Atman, the Paramatman, the universal self, or Brahman. And then, who is it that suffers and how that suffering can be removed? And then, other spiritual disciplines given and at the same time again emphasized upon the truth of experiencing God. Now let us read. Like two birds of golden plumage, you see, this is an oft-quoted verse. You know, many times in my lectures I have quoted this. Like two birds of golden plumage, inseparable companions, the individual self and the immortal self are perched on the branches of the self-same tree. Now first let us find out, you see, two birds of golden plumage, they are most two birds, beautiful. And they are inseparable companions. You see, you cannot separate the individual soul from the universal, the immortal self. Cannot be separated. Why cannot be separated? Because what is the individual self? You see, Atman or Brahman identified with the mind, senses and body gives the illusion of an individual man. You are Atman, encased in sheaths, to simplify it. There is this physical sheath. There is this subtle sheath, the mind. There is the causal sheath, the sense of ego. And this sense of ego has arisen because of the identification of the Atman with these sheaths. Now, for instance, when we are awake, we are identified with all these sheaths. I have the consciousness of the body, I am the body. I identify myself with the body. I identify myself with the mind and senses, the moods of the mind. And then I have this illusion, I am an individual man. So you see, they're inseparable companions, always together. You cannot say that this is individual man and this is the immortal self. It is the immortal self that appears as the individual self. But the immortal self has not been affected by, you see, this identification. As I identify myself with the body, I want bodily pleasures. And I do good or I do bad. And the Atman, the true spirit in me, the self in me, remains unaffected. Now, for instance, there is a law of karma. Now, this is very important to understand. There is a law of karma. As I sow, so I reap. But what is who is sowing and who is reaping? It's the individual man, that identification. And as long as that identification is there, and there is the illusion of ego, so long I am responsible for my karmas. What I sow, I reap. And as such, you see, because I'm identifying myself with my mind, body and senses, when this body dies, alright, all the impressions of my deeds and thoughts are in the mind, and I'm identified with that. And then with the mind again, with that mind, I have to take another body that would be suited to express, to unfold the impressions or my character that I've formed in this life. And this goes on and on and on. But in all these births and deaths and rebirths, throughout all our good deeds and bad deeds, Atman remains completely unaffected. He is not contaminated. In other words, you are forever, you are free and perfect. But until you realize that, you suffer and you grieve. And that's what is pointed out in these few verses. Like two birds of golden plumage, inseparable companions, the individual self and the immortal self are perched on the branches of the self, same tree, this tree of a body. This body is compared to a tree. And on this tree, there are these two birds, inseparable companions. Now, what happens? The former tastes of the sweet and bitter fruits of the tree. That is this so-called individual self. He is tasting the sweet and bitter fruits of the tree. One's pleasure. Not that he tastes the bitter fruit knowingly, but as he tastes a sweet fruit, the reaction comes, you see. And then also wicked deeds, in order to find a little kick, a little pleasure. And so, tasting the sweet and bitter fruits of this tree, the latter, that is the Paramatman, the immortal self, tasting of neither, is not actually tasting. He simply observes. So God within us, you see, he just is the witness, he's observing this individual bird, individual self, hopping from one branch to another, eating the sweet and bitter fruits of the tree, but remains unaffected, waits patiently. Now, the individual self, deluded by forgetfulness of his identity with the divine self, bewildered by his ego, you see, here he explains, what is this individual self? Deluded by forgetfulness of his identity with the divine self. When that forgetfulness has come, then there has arisen, he's bewildered by his ego, and that ego has been formed by identification with the mind, body and senses, etc. you know, this ignorance or avidya or maya has two aspects. In one aspect, it covers the reality, the truth within us, our true nature, which is pure, free and divine, remains hidden, covered. And then it creates an illusion of an ego by that identification. The individual self, deluded by forgetfulness of his identity with the divine self, bewildered by his ego, what happens? Grieves and is sad. You know, through this identification again with the body mind, it doesn't stop there. There is the identification, husband, wife, children, family, wealth, house, property, estate. You see, identifying with everything. This belongs to me. And what happens? We lose this, we lose that. This happens, that happens. Never the same. Everybody's experience is that. You know that story of Buddha. A mother lost her son, child, only child. Naturally, she grieved. She came to Buddha. Lord, give life to this son of mine. Buddha said, Mother, go and find, knock at the doors everywhere. And find somebody who has not lost any, who has never lost by death anybody. And then bring some mustard seeds from that home, and I will revive your son. So this mother went and knocked at the door of so many, of everybody. Has anybody in your home ever died? Yes, 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 yes. And so she came. And then, of course, she no longer asked. She was consoled. Because life ends in death. And so, you see, through this identification, yes, we have pleasure, true. You see, it's not pessimism, but we have to face facts. There is pleasure and pain. There are good days and bad days. There is happiness and suffering. And so, of course, you see, in anyone's life, it is the sadness, the grief that creates a greater impression. But again, the maya is such we forget. And again we have, you know, we create another family. You see, that's life. And so he says, the individual self, deluded by forgetfulness of his identity with the divine self, bewildered by his ego, grieves and is sad. But, you see, that's not the whole of life at all. That's not the destiny of anybody. Because everybody, every one of us again, will have to attain that immortal bliss. And so again he points out, but when he recognizes the worshipful Lord as his own self, as his own true self, and beholds his glory, he grieves no more. Now, you see here again, when he recognizes his worshipful Lord as the worshipful Lord as his own self. How does that recognition come? You see, I'm talking to you. You listen to it, you believe in it, that there is that divine self within you, that is pure, free and perfect. Does that give you the knowledge? No. You know, and that's the difficulty. You know, in India also you have a sect called Dry Vedantists, you know. Yeah. And they say, well, I'm Brahman, that's all, what else to do? I'm Brahman, and then I can live any kind of life, what does it matter? I'm Brahman. And that's also, they are preaching in that same way, what is known as Zen Buddhism today, in the West, but Zen is not that. So you are that, what more to do? How do you recognize this worshipful Lord as your own self? You have to practice spiritual disciplines. You have to rise above your consciousness, physical consciousness. You have to rise above the three states of consciousness, dreaming, wakefulness, and deep sleep. Transcend these three states of consciousness. And you can do that, of course, in the grace of God, but through spiritual disciplines. You see, Shankara, the great seer philosopher, in commenting upon this, he points out, then practice the spiritual disciplines and meditation, and then only you attain that knowledge. You see, this grief, this experience of the senses, something direct and immediate, by simple understanding that now these are not real, these are ephemeral, there is the eternal reality within. You have to have the direct and immediate experience of it. When you are dreaming, and in dream you are experiencing something, you can't get rid of that experience until you wake up. Similarly, our waking state experiences, we can get freed from them only when we wake up into another consciousness. Of course, when you go to deep sleep, yes, you forget. That's true. But then it doesn't last. Again you wake up and the same troubles and grief and misery. But when you wake up to that other state, then it is different. Your whole vision has changed. But when he recognizes this worshipful Lord as his own true self and beholds his glory, he grieves. When the seer beholds the effulgent one, the Lord, the Supreme Being, then transcending both good and evil, and freed from impurities, he unites himself with him. Again, you see, what is this knowledge of that effulgent being, that light? Knowledge means identity. You see, you are the Atman, and identifying ourselves with all that, that is gone, and you remain in your pristine glory. You are yourself. The other day somebody asked the question that, now, this individual man, I no longer exist. No, your false, your ego that is an illusion, that illusion breaks away and the real I become manifest. When the seer beholds the effulgent one, the Lord, the Supreme Being. You see, what wonderful truth is there? Your Atman. The Atman, the Self that is within you. That is the effulgent Lord of the universe. You are the creator, the preserver and destroyer of this universe. There is no other God but you. And that God is within the shrine of your heart. Nearer than the nearest. Remember, Tennyson's lines, he says something, nearer than hands and feet. When the seer beholds the effulgent one, the Lord, the Supreme Being, then transcending both good and evil. What are good and evil? You see, not anything outside, but your good karmas and your bad karmas. You transcend both. You see, there is the law of karma. And the law of karma, which means that you are subject to happiness and misery, you are subject to birth and death according to your karmas, but when you know the Atman, the immortal Self, the Lord of the universe, within your own Self, then you have become freed from karmas, because the karmas attach themselves to the mind, senses, and as long as there is that sense of ego, that illusion of an ego, there, so long you are subject to karmas. But when that illusion of an ego vanishes, no karmas. You transcend both good and evil karmas. And freed from impurities. Impurities are in the body and the mind, not in the Atman. So you are freed from the impurities. He unites himself with him. The Lord is the one life shining forth from every creature. Seeing him present in all, the wise man is humble, puts not himself forward. His delight is in the Self. His joy is in the Self. He serves the Lord in all, such as he indeed are the true words of Brahma. I'll take this up again in my next session. May I invite questions? Do you agree with the principle of psycho-cybernetics that image held in the mind and thought, held in the mind and thoroughly believed in, are apt to materialize in our life and experience? Well, you mean something like auto-suggestion? Well, it may be true, auto-suggestion, what you may think and you may believe, you begin to visualize and see, that's quite possible. But meditation is not that. There's a big difference between auto-suggestion and meditation. You see, you are meditating, say upon an image. But when the experience comes, that image has vanished, and in its place, God in His true being becomes revealed to you. For instance, you are meditating, say, on Christ as your chosen idea. But you are trying to visualize Christ in a particular way. But when you may have the vision of Christ, but not what you have been meditating on. Because when Christ appears to you, he appears as he is. And the same, what another will see him, what another will see him. Or it may happen, you are meditating upon Christ, but instead of the vision of Christ, you may have the vision of something else, of God in another aspect. And perhaps with no form. And you are meditating on a formless God, and perhaps an avatar, a vision of an avatar will come to you. You see, that is why I always point out that a true mystic never remains one-sided, narrow, or remains a Christocentric or Krishna-centric or Buddha-centric. Cannot. Because he experiences different. And so there is that difference between meditation and observation. How was man first put on earth so that he might be reincarnated? Now, you see, you take it for granted, your theological, Christian theological idea that God created this universe at a certain period of time, you know. And it began, you see, with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Now, how did God create that Garden of Eden again? And what did he do before he created Adam and Eve? So you see, this question is a fallacious question. It has no sense, I'm sorry to say. Man is beginningless and endless. Does a hypocrite in religion ever think that he is one? Who is a hypocrite? One who says something and acts different. So, if a hypocrite shows that he is spiritual, and if he is a hypocrite, that means he has no religion inside. Otherwise, he would not be a hypocrite. If he shows life, spiritual life outside and inside, then he is not a hypocrite. So, how can he have religion if he is a hypocrite? You know, we have a saying in our country. Water in a pond that is covered with scum. No, beware of these few. Water covered with scum. Can't drink that water, you'll get malaria fever. And any girl with double veil, beware of such. And anybody who talks too much, and anyone who talks very little, and anybody who puts on mark of spirituality, you see, in India sometimes they take a sacred leaf and put it on by the ear, you know, to show that he just come out from worship, you see. So one with that tulasi leaf in his ear, on his ear, beware of such. In other words, those that make a show of religion, beware of such. Swami, do you mean to say that we should not forget the kicks we received and thus be able to better think of the Lord? You know, when you go to quote me, I'm confused. Because what I say, perhaps I've not been able to express clearly, but you get something else. You mean to say that we should not forget the kicks we receive and thus be able to better. I think, yes, I may have said this way, that we can happen to forget the experiences of happiness, but we cannot afford to forget the experiences of misery. Because misery is a greater teacher in this sense that they bring dispassionless. And we learn to think of God more and more. You know, when you are in trouble, your mind, if you practice in a spiritual life, of course, then your mind naturally goes to God. You know, sometimes the teachers teach you to meditate and they say, just think that you are on a precipice, and if you can't hold on to the feet of God, you'll be completely smashed. Visualize that way and then concentrate, you see. So you see, misery is a great teacher. Swami, is it true that the story of the Gita is allegorical, describing only the struggles within ourselves between selfish and selfless deeds? That's what some people try to explain away the battle between the Kurus and the Pandavas. But I do not consider it merely allegorical, it is also historical. And then, does it mean that if we want to be happy, we only need to look within? If you want to be happy, yes, you have to learn to look within, because the so-called happiness depends upon our contact with objects. And so, it doesn't last. But, you see, you know what? The dog bites a dry bone and gets great kick out of it. Don't you know that? So, you see, this happiness that we try to get by in contact with objects, it's really our own juice, nothing else. And so it is that real happiness is inside. And so, if you want to be happy, can't you turn your will over to God even though you are not illumined? Yes, 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 try to do that. Of course you have to do that. Learn to surrender your will to the will of the Lord. But you see, then again forget. Again my will comes. Again surrender. Don't think that, oh, I have surrendered my will to the Lord once and for all. It doesn't happen. But do that every moment. And when you do that, what happens? You begin to think of Him. That is the main point. And of course, you have to think of the Lord. You have to surrender yourself to the Lord before you attain illumination. That is the way to attain illumination. Is the Atman actually the doer? I am the machine, thou art the operator, for instance. Now that's a very interesting question. When you talk about the Atman, Atman is not the doer. Atman is the witness. Now again, if you see as God, personal being who is dwelling within you, then just know that God, it is His will, is working everywhere. And so you try to surrender your will to Him. I am the machine, thou art the operator. In order that you can be freed from that sense, that illusory sense of ego. See, when that ego dies, all trouble cease. Then revelation comes. Is a mood of the mind sometimes caused by random working of the gunas, or as these gunas in our lives always influenced by our karmas? Well, it's what you may call a vicious circle. There are all the three gunas, and according to your karmas, your nature of deeds and thoughts, the gunas become predominant. Will you please explain the difference between a new and old soul? Does this mean that one has been reincarnated more than the other? Thank you. Now this new and old soul is something that I learned after coming to this country. When the guru dies, it's a great shock to the disciple. How does the disciple then find personal spiritual guidance? Now when the guru dies physically, he is not dead, he still helps you. Is Vedanta a Hindu sect, a self-contained religion or a philosophy? Vedanta and Hinduism are identical. You see, Hinduism is a misnomer. But the real name of our religion is Vedanta or eternal religion, Sanatana Dharma, based upon the Vedas. It's not a sect. Can you tell us what are the disciplines that one does in addition to meditation? Well, we shall come to that, you see. Truthfulness, continence, chastity, non-injury. There are such virtues which you shall consider. You can't meditate just close your eyes and think of God unless you have achieved certain purity.
Om Hari Om. Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirjam Karavavahi Tejasinabhaditamastu Mabhidvishabhavahi. Om. May Brahman protect us. May He guide us. May He give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all. May our study enlighten us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace.